You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. In this Knowledge Series podcast, we're speaking with Guy Pierce, author of the Isaka Journal Volume 6 article titled Governance, Risk, Compliance, and a Big Data Case Study. In this podcast, we're discussing the role of governance, risk, and compliance as it relates to a big data project at a major bank. We're also talking about how the program might have been different if conducted after the European General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, goes into effect. So, Guy, your article analyzes a big data analytics project at a Forbes Global Top 1000 bank. Can you give us some background information about this bank and why they embarked on this big data project?
The bank is one of the top 1000 largest banks in the world, and interestingly, the project didn't start as a big data project. Rather, what happened is I'd been engaged to leverage the bank's data specifically to create financial value. And as I was investigating the bank's strategy and its performance and its market research, suddenly it became interesting and said, well, hang on a minute. You know, if we look at this market research, it does seem that the bank's market share is under pressure. You know, it was the biggest bank within its particular geographical jurisdiction. And it was a matter of, you know, well, is there any way that we can use data to solve this problem? You know, traditionally, when you try and solve a market share problem, you might look at your product portfolio and say, well, maybe we need to create some new products. Or you might look at your channel portfolio and say, well, maybe we need to increase the type of access we need to our customers, or so customers can get to us better. But each of those, as we know in banking, I mean, they're short-lived. You know, they don't really give you a sustained competitive advantage. And any big bank within a relatively short time can actually create an environment where it can compete with you. However, there's one area where it's a little bit harder for competitors to compete with, and that's if you manage to use your data creatively and productively, you know, in some form to create value. And that's what happened here. We saw the problem and said, but hang on a minute, maybe this is not about products, maybe this is not about channels, maybe this is about how customers perceive us, how customers interact with us, you know, whether customers feel that they're actually being fulfilled. And as a result, what actually happened is we ended up with a customer centricity project, or maybe if you want to phrase it differently, a data-driven project in customer centricity.
Can you define big data? How is it leveraged at this bank?
So one of the big IT research houses, I love their definition, and some of your listeners will be quite familiar with the so-called 3 Vs, the volume, velocity, and variety component of data. So let's start with that. Certainly volume is quite easy. That's just the amount of data that you have. But it's not necessarily in absolute terms. It's not just a matter of, you know, it's so many petabytes or exabytes. I mean, a small company who's, you know, stepping up from, let's say, megabytes to gigabytes may have its own big data problem. The big difference between the small company that's now struggling with data that's much bigger than what it's used to compared to a big company that's having the same problem is that for the smaller problem, solutions exist out in the market. For the bigger organization, solutions are not readily available, and it can be really hard to solve those data projects. So that's the volume side. On velocity, that's the rate of change of data. How quickly is data growing? So a typical example of the velocity side is if your customers are committing a lot of transactions, you know, that's certainly going to grow your data very quickly. If it's at peak period and you're growing at 1,000 transactions per second, that is a high velocity data flow and lots of things are happening. Typically, when people speak about big data, though, on velocity, they refer to your social media feeds, whether it's on Twitter or, you know, any other social media platform as being high velocity because there's a big flow of data. Then there's variety, and this is where I see the biggest opportunity on big data, is that it's not just your structured data or the data that's within your organization. There is so much data outside that it is possible to use to augment your own corporate data. I mean, this conversation we're having here is a form of data in its own right. But whether it's economic data or government data or research data, I mean, there's so much external data of different types out there. The key comes in terms of how you merge that data, how you fuse that data to have a bigger data set than what you created with, and that gives you greater insight into whatever it is that you're trying to solve. But big data is much more than just those three V's. The other two important dimensions is that it involves a new way of processing data. So in our case, the scale of data we were using just exceeded any of the platform potential that we had. Things were slow, you know, and if we had one breakdown somewhere or one batch run didn't work, we wouldn't be able to give our daily feeds, you know, or produce the analytics, you know, for that particular day's feed. So we had to look at innovative processing, really much faster processing to be able to be sure that we had some measure of, performance risk mitigation so that we could perform our analytics a lot quicker. And of course, the other side is none of this really matters if it doesn't, you know, create value for the organization. And that's what really matters. And I think that's what the magic of this project was. It looked at, you know, three different types of data. You know, it was huge data by volume. It was huge velocity. It was changing at, you know, up to 1,000, 2,000 times per second in some of our transaction environments. And we had... And, you know, besides the bank's internal data source, we were looking at, was it 7 or 8 external data sources that we fused with our own. We changed our processing, plus we produced the value, in this case, $94.95 million of value in 6 months for the bank. And that is the magic of big data. What is the outcome? And it's not only about the inputs, it's what's the outcome.
Your article said the bank regained market share through the creation of $94.95 million U.S. dollars in incremental value. How did big data help them do this?
So the important thing here is, you know, it's hard to say big data created the value, because if you've got data, it doesn't matter all of the magical insights you've created. It doesn't matter how you get it out to the point of action. If no one's doing anything with it, nothing is going to happen. So as much as we produced insights that enabled the branches to have much more valuable conversations with their customers, the important thing is how... You know, the more important thing was, how did we manage to get the data out so that 1,300 different branches could use the data to have much more structured conversations with their customers? And that's the magic, is that you have to create an environment where whatever the outcome of your big data environment, it needs to be actionable. You might have heard about that before. I mean, if people don't act on it, you know, it's not going to happen. And of course, in our case, the big issue was, so how do we get our big data out to the point of decision making, which happened to be out in the branches? And that was a whole project all by itself.
Many enterprises are now preparing for GDPR adoption. If conducted in a post-GDPR era, how might this big data project have differed?
Right. So there's all sorts of considerations in GDPR. Some jurisdictions or some countries certainly a lot more advanced than others. But in general, there's a few that I'd like to focus on. I mean, there's all sorts of things like explicit consent, which I think many jurisdictions are quite familiar with, right of access. Let's speak about right of access for argument's sake. It's one thing to be able to say, yes, I filled in a form, please, Mr. or Ms. or Mrs. Organization, you know, please let me know what personal data you have about me. That's one thing. But GDPR in particular starts saying, hang on a minute, you need to be able to provide that information in machine-readable form, and it needs to be structured. In other words, it's not just an information dump. Here it is. This is all the information about you, and it's a, you know, it's a paper printout that you might receive in the mail. As I said, the one specific issue around GDPR is it needs to be machine readable and it needs to be structured. Some other areas that might be quite interesting, in fact, one of the most important ones, in my view, is data protection by design. So many people go into a data project, you know, and do the analytics and get things out with no regard or no explicit regard for the safety and the security of that information, either the source data, the process data, or the data that gets out to the endpoint. And in this respect, GDPR is explicit that, hang on, any data project, data protection by design, you need to know right up front what kind of privacy protection mechanisms you're going to put in place, and also ensure that you have the appropriate monitoring environment for these things. Another one, data breaches. Some jurisdictions, I mean, particularly the US, that they have an infrastructure there which, you know, you do need to report data breaches. I'm not sure if there's a limit on the number of records or whatever, but certainly you do need to report the breaches. But in other jurisdictions, it's not so important. In fact, an organization could be a data breach, and if the newspapers don't get hold of it, you'd actually never know about it. GDPR insists that data breaches must be reported to the supervisory authority and communicated to the respective data subjects. In other words, the people who have been impacted by the breach. And this is an important issue. This is not just a matter of, you know, I'm using data anymore. If you've got a breach, you better be sure and you better understand that you need to communicate that breach to the impacted parties. Another one, and I know banks do this reasonably well, is that you need data protection officers. You know, someone that specifically looks at, shall I call it, the interests of GDPR for a particular data initiative. And this is something that I think many organizations, you know, particularly maybe the less well-regulated, within the less well-regulated industries, are going to have some challenges with, is in terms of, yeah, so how do I determine who is specifically going to be looking at the GDPR impact of any of my data initiatives? I mean, there's so many more that, you know, that have got an impact both from a people perspective, a process perspective, and even a system perspective. But certainly those are some of the ones that come to mind straight away.
So how does data governance impact a big data project?
Okay, this is fabulous. Some people might say, oh, data governance, oh, this is all boring stuff, there's data stewards and everything. But let me tell you one thing. You can have the best big data warehouse, let's call it a big data warehouse or data lake. You can have the best analytics. You can have the best means of getting that information out to decision makers to turn that insight into action and subsequently to value. But it's all really, it's all quite meaningless if you've got no idea about the quality of the data. You know, it's all fine and well to do data analytics, but if you've got no idea of the quality of the data, my first issue that I'm going to have if I had to see that analytics is, well, how can I trust these analytics? What was the quality of the underlying data? Another aspect is, of course, metadata. So let's assume that a particular form of analytics needed to look at interest rates and compare interest rates across products or whatever. My first question would be, well, how do you know that you were comparing apples with apples? In other words, a comparable interest rate across instances. And this enters the domain of metadata, data about your data, telling you that this interest field, this interest rate field means this, this interest rate field means this. Oh, they happen to be the same. Yes, they're comparable. And this is a huge issue. I mean, whenever you create a report, one of the first things is, okay, but what do you mean by interest rate? Or what do you mean by term? Or what do you mean by customer or by sale? This is where metadata comes in. Is there the potential for standard definitions for data within the organization? Another key area is data lineage. So you might have your source systems, and you export your data from a source system into a data warehouse, and maybe you export something from a data warehouse and you process it a little bit and you put it in a data mart, and then you import it into another application that does something else to it. The issue is that if you're reporting at that, let's call it a fourth hop really, it's a regulatory requirement in banking now via BCBS 239 to be able to say, well, you're giving me this report at the fourth hop, but what is the source of this data? Where did it come from? And how has that data changed across hops? This is the realm of data lineage. In other words, where did it come from? And how has it changed? And how can I trust the data that I'm looking at this fourth hop? And then, of course, there's master data and reference data management. So one of the key things, you know, there's all sorts of things like product codes, transaction codes, country codes out there. But some organizations don't maintain these very well. Some of them are incorrect. Some of them are old. And the whole domain of MDM, as it is called, concerns, well, how do I ensure that my reference data is accurate? And each of these things, if you take all of them together, data quality, metadata, data lineage, and master and reference data management, If you don't have any of this, the key issue is you can't trust the outcomes of your big data analytics, unless you've got some view of what is the quality. Am I comparing apples to apples devices when I'm doing computations? Do I know where the data come from? And actually, are the reference tables accurate? You've got to doubt whether the outcome of your analytics processes are valid. And that is the importance of data governance in big data.
How does risk affect a big data project?
So risk, one global organization defines risk as the impact of uncertainty on objectives. So key thing is, you know, so what are our objectives? What are we trying to achieve? And it's only once we unpack, well, if we're trying to achieve something, we're taking action, things are changing, and we're saying, well, what kinds of things can be uncertain? If I had to link this back to the previous question, the kinds of things that are uncertain could be for an organization, we don't know our data quality. That's a risk. Because if I go and produce analytics and I act on those outcomes, I could be incurring incremental operating risk for the organization because I don't know how good those analytics are. Changing regulations. I might have been, you know, my whole environment might be tuned to a particular set of regulations. But if something like GDPR comes up and I've got May 2018 as a horizon, I potentially have a risk. I need to know, okay, so where are all of the areas that concern privacy, that concern data access, that concern cyber risk? I need to understand all of these things. And if I miss anything, certainly that could create a regulatory risk for me because that very thing that I've forgotten about or was not aware of could actually result in the organization being in violation of a particular area of regulation. And there's also compliance, of course. If I don't comply, you know, speaking to the previous answer there, if I don't comply, I may be in line for a penalty. So certainly, if we had to put all of these things together, it's really, what is the impact of all of this uncertainty on our reputation? If our customers get the feel that we don't look after our data or that there's been a, you know, minor data leak here or whatever it might be, I mean, this impacts the reputation of the organization. And this is one of the most important things that boards try and protect against, is to be sure that the reputation of the organization stays intact.
So we discussed GDPR, but more generically, how do compliance concerns affect projects like these?
I started touching on reputation. And certainly from the board of directors' perspective, this is the most important thing. If I don't comply, well, in this case, first of all, oh, this organization not complying with GDPR. So first of all, I've got to doubt its ability to protect my data. What happens if there's a breach? I can't believe them. Second thing is, oh, how do I know that they're serious about my privacy? So, you know, an organization is going to feel, well, hang on a minute, I'd rather go and transact with a competitor than to transact with this organization because I just don't feel I can trust them. And the more and more data breaches there are, and there's been some significant high-profile data breaches over the last 2 or 3 years, the more customers are going to feel, hang on a minute, I would rather go somewhere else. And, of course, the other thing is the impact on shareholders. So in the case of GDPR, as an example, I mean, you could have a penalty of up to 20 million euro. So suddenly now you're destroying shareholder value by not being in compliance with regulation. Suddenly you pay, hang on, I've got 20 million euro. Or that could be 4% of the total worldwide annual turnover, which may be more than 20 million euro. So what I'm sitting with here is I haven't just been in non-compliance. I've actually destroyed shareholder value. And those are important considerations for any organization.
Your article mentions the importance of enterprises being increasingly aware of regulatory considerations. Do you think there are any regulations on the horizon that enterprises should begin considering?
So the impact of GDPR is expected to be huge, not only for Europe, though, or any organizations doing business with Europe. There's going to be repercussions. So some countries are going to be looking at their own privacy regulations and their own cybersecurity regulations and starting to think, wow, you know, maybe our environment needs a bit of an update. And this isn't just speculation. In fact, those of you who have been reading the news will know that on November the 3rd, there was an article in ZDNet which said that Australia was likely to get its own GDPR. So already you've got a large country starting to think, hang on a minute, maybe we need to look at this in a lot more depth. So it's no longer just about Europe. You've got other countries that are going to be starting to look at this a lot more seriously, and I don't think it's going to stop at Australia. So certainly the repercussions of the of the regulation are considerable and not only limited to Europe.
And finally, what's your advice to anyone looking to embark on this kind of data project?
Much of these regulations is really about common sense. In fact, you know, although at the time that we did this big data project, and it's a few years ago now, you might have said, oh, you know, you didn't have as stringent regulations in place. It was easier to do everything. I want to say I'm not so sure that's necessarily true, because common sense, and I can actually speak about this, you know, at the project, it was a common sense issue. You know, do we respect our customers? If we respect our customers, we're not going to exploit the data in a way that's going to be potentially offensive or that's potentially going to get on the wrong side of our customers. Again, it became a reputational consideration. So it's common sense. You know, is my data safe? I mean, there's just so much news out there. There's so much hacking. There's so much malware. There's so many things going on. You know, have I covered the basics? You know, do I have the basic groundwork covered? Not only in terms of technology, but my processes, my people. Do my people understand what cyber risk means? Such a lot of it is common sense. It's not just a matter of, uh-oh, this is regulation, we better do it. Just take a moment to sit down and think, if you were a customer of the organization that you're doing this, doing this data work for, how would you feel? In other words, put yourselves in your customer's shoes and think, what's the best way that I respect my customer? And that's why, to me, I said, you know, it's a common sense conversation. It's not always just about the law. And that's probably something, worth thinking about when you embark on your next data project.
Thanks, Guy. And that's all we have time for in this edition of the ISACA podcast. If you're interested in learning more about the data project Guy mentioned, read his Volume 6 ISACA Journal article, Governance, Risk, Compliance, and a Big Data Case Study.